Hello out there, theater lovers. We are back for our November episode.
Hi, everyone. And I'm back for our November episode. Hi, it's me. Do you remember me?
I bet they do. How could anyone forget you, Lee? I don't know how anyone could forget you. Yeah, this is going to be a very fun one. We are doing a middle school play by Alice Nora, who is a second year resident with First Kiss Theater. Yeah, so we are really excited for that.
Alice has been with us since the beginning, and we're really excited to talk about this play.
I've been for a while. It's funny, it's heartfelt, it's a little too reminiscent of my middle school experience for sometimes my comfort. Yeah.
Deeply so. We'll get into the nostalgia of it all.
Oh, yes. Lee has some very intricate and hilarious dramaturgy for us today. But before we get into that, as usual, we have some theater news, theater announcements, what's going on in the theatrical space in this general month. As a playwright here, and I know a lot of you listening are also playwrights, I'm going to start out here with some submissions that you might want to be on your radar. So one of the ones that I'm really excited to apply for is the New Work Series at Emerging Artists Theater. So the submission date, the deadline is December 1st. So you still have, like, when this comes out, I think you still have like 2.5 weeks to get your submission in, which I think is plenty of time. They accept solo shows, dance, cabaret, musicals, short and long, plays short and long, subway musicians, storytelling, sketch comedy, interactive shows, anything out of the box that you want to submit, they will take a look at. So that's a great one for all you experimental artists out there as well. And the other submission I want to highlight is the Independent International Award for Improper Dramaturgy 2022. This is an award that I was a finalist for back in 2020. The people who run it, Zhenya Stashkov and Vibrating Body, are awesome. They're amazing. And you don't get much money. However, your play, if you win, gets performed in Russia and, like, translated into Russian, which I think is a pretty cool thing to have under your belt. So the submission date for that one is also December 1st. So if you want to submit to those, get those in by December 1st. We also have a grant out there that Lee found for us.
Yeah, I'm
super excited about this one.
Also, with a December 1st deadline, the Indie Theater Fund has applications open for their Pay Your People grant. It is a $1,000 grant open to indie theater companies and productions that can be used to compensate historically excluded artists. So if that's you, if you're an indie theater artist, check out that grant for sure. It's a lottery system, so it's not a huge, crazy, extensive 80-page application process. It's kind of just like, send us a little bit about yourselves and you'll be entered into the drawing pool. Indie Space also has on a rolling basis their mental health grants for artists. Those are $500 grants, also a lottery system, so check those out as well if you're an artist in need of funds.
Yeah, aren't we all? Yes, and $500, as I'm sure a lot of you know, can go a long way. It can really go a long way.
Yes.
So apply for those if you are in need of funds. We hope you win.
I won a few weeks ago.
You did?
For the mental health grant.
You did?
Yeah, so like it's real and people win.
All right. Like, there you go.
Yeah.
Not a scam, folks. It's huge.
Not a scam. Highly recommend. We love you, Indie Space.
We love you, Indie Space. And finally, just some shows that are going on in the New York City area or digitally. Let's see what we got here. So at Second Street, New York City, at the Tony Kaiser Theater, we have Camp Siegfried playing through December 4th. You can get tickets at 2st.com, so like Second Street Theater. at 2st, yeah, .com. So there's that one. If you're listening to this as soon as it comes out at noon on Friday, you can come see my reading of my newest play at The Tank at 3 p.m. Probably a little late to be promoting that, but you know, if you're listening to this right as it premieres and you live in the New York City area, it's free. You can just like walk into The Tank and come see my show if you want to come vibe with us. Let's see, we also have another self promo, the digital theater protest piece called None of Us Want to Be Here that I produced and was the lead artist for is up. We have a website, digital theater with an RE, protestpiece.weebly.com. You can go see it there, see our dramaturgy, all of our program stuff. We worked really hard on that. So if you're interested in seeing that, I would really, really appreciate that. All right. And let's see, Lee, do you have any shows you're interested or excited to see in the next month or so?
Oh, God, so many. Well, I don't know if we should talk about this now or later, but the play we're talking about today.
Oh, yeah.
A middle school play by Alice Nora is going up at The Tank, December 11th and 12th at 7 p.m. It is the final full-scale production of First Kiss Theater's season. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a great time. Come see it.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great. And you know what, Lee? This is actually a really funny story. So I was just scrolling on Instagram and I saw the middle school play promo that First Kiss Theater's posted, mm-hmm. right? And I'm looking at the cast. I went to college with one of the girls that y'all cast.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Who?
Yeah, Nicole. I went to college That's with so her. Funny. Yeah, she went to Gettysburg with me.
Alice and Emmy work with her all the time.
Small freaking world.
Like one of their, yeah, wow.
Yeah, so
small world.
Again,
small world.
I feel like this happens every other episode. We realize how small the theater world is. because someone knows
this
someone.
This cast has like 12 people in it. Mm-hmm. So if you're a theater person, you probably know somebody in this show.
Yeah, honestly, if you're in New York, you probably adjacently know someone, even if it's like someone that someone else you know knows. Like, so you should come see it.
Yeah.
Because you probably know someone.
I'll be there.
And Lee will be there. And I will be attempting to be there. But, you know, as a teacher, sometimes my attempts do not work out. Mm-hmm. But if you want to come say hi to Lee and potentially also me, you should definitely come see a middle school play. We will probably promote that as well, or rather Lee will promote that with Alice at the end of the episode. Yeah, one last announcement. Due to scheduling conflicts, it'll just be Lee and Alice for the interview portion at the end of this episode.
Then they can't know that we don't record everything all at the same time always.
They can't know that we're adults with schedule problems. Oh my God.
They can't know we have real jobs.
They can't know we have lives. But y'all, yeah. So, I mean, especially y'all know as artists, sometimes we're working more than one job. So yeah, it happens. But we wanted to make sure you got to hear from both of us at the beginning of the episode. But I'm really excited for you guys to listen to Lee and Alice's interview at the end. I know it's going to be super fun and probably hilarious because you're both really funny. So
wow. You're building it up in
I'm
big
building
way.
It up. Okay, well, I'm sure it'll live up to expectations. Don't you worry about that. Okay, so that is the announcements, our little intro portion for you guys. So without further ado, we're going to get into the dramaturgy section. Take it away, Lee.
Woohoo. So who is Alice Nora? Mm. I'm definitely not stealing this from her New Play Exchange profile.
Oh, we steal all the time from New Play Exchange.
We borrow. Alice Nora is an NYC-based actor, writer, and comedic genius. Alice is a self-described nurturer of the creative process and strives to do so with joy, positivity, and possibility. Selected stage credits include Unmarried Man at the Pit NYC, Middle School Play at the Tank, Songs for a New World at the Mint Theater, Dead Legends Live, SF Entertainment, The Who's Tommy, Berkshire Theater, and Nine, also Berkshire Theater, where her performance was acclaimed as nothing short of remarkable. Previously, Alice has developed work as part of Fresh Ground Pepper's Accountability Lab, and currently, she is an artist in residence with First Kiss Theater, where she is developing new plays, sketches, and digital shorts. Featured shorts include the captivatingly cute A Very Kitten Christmas, along with its sequel, A Very Kitten Christmas Snow Day. Winner of Ensemble Theater of Chattanooga Lights Up, one-page play series with her play Bodega Nights, BFA Theater Arts and Creative Writing. That's Alice, and I do want to say A Very Kitten Christmas and A Very Kitten Christmas Snow Day, two of my favorite, like, pieces of art that have ever been created. Check them out on First Kiss Theater's website. They're fantastic. But today we're not here to talk about A Very Kitten Christmas.
No.
We are here to talk about a middle school play.
Yes.
Also a Christmas play, though. And to steal from New Play Exchange once again with our summary here. Relive the Wonder Years with this comedic take on the messy and outlandish time that is the middle school experience. Follow the stories at Doverdale Middle School in this early 2000s piece that's equal parts tween heartbreak and unexplained nonsense.
That is a very accurate summary.
Yes. I mean, what a romp. What a romp this play is.
Yes, truly. Truly.
I want to start by talking about the 2000s of it all.
Yes.
This is a period piece.
Yeah.
This is a period piece. The year is 2004. Facebook has just been launched. Mm-hmm. It's only for college students right now. The Boston Red Sox have just won their first World Series since 1918. George Bush has just been reelected for a second term. Not feeling great about that.
Mm.
The iPod Classic is like the thing to have.
Oh, God, yeah. Like,
I'm talking about it as though I remember all of this.
I mean, I do. I know. I'm how much older am I than you? 2 years older?
You're 4 years
older. Am I 4 years older than you, girl? No, dude.
Are you 26?
Man.
Is that
true? Yes, I am 26.
Yeah.
I turned 27 yeah. in January. Oh my God, I'm old.
Whoa.
I remember this. I was not in middle school in 2004. I don't
believe. I wasn't either. I was in preschool.
Oh,
baby.
Yeah. No, I wasn't in preschool. I'm trying to think. So I was 5 in 2001. So I was 8. I was 8 in 2004. Yeah. So I wasn't in middle school, but I was pretty close. And I do recall this period of time with disgusting vivacity. if you want to call it that. And I don't think the iPhone wasn't out yet because I was
not till like 07.
No, because I was in middle school when the iPhone came out.
Yeah.
Nah, I don't even think the pink Motorola Razr was like a thing yet.
No. We're at this really interesting point in time in this play where, like, I feel like the world is still, like, coming to terms with the, like, getting comfortable with the idea that it's the 21st century. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe the 90s haven't really ended yet.
No.
Like, life is still happening mostly in real life.
Yeah.
Like, it's different. It's different.
Yeah. And just, the internet exists, but like social media doesn't really. I think
MySpace, like the computer room at your house.
Oh my God,
like
a computer that's like a foot thick.
Yeah.
And yeah, you play like the Disney Channel games with your parents' permission on the computer in the computer room. So yeah, this is really, if you are very, very Gen Z, you might not remember this because maybe you were born in 2004.
But the vibes are there.
Oh, yeah.
The vibes are there. Like, right off the bat in this play, we're hit with this excellent framing device of these school announcements, and we get hit with like school lunches, which are just like corn and milk and like gross meat. The DARE program, running the mile. We get hit with a limited two reference right off the bat. Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Limited two. This was also like, this is how you know the time, because it's pre the switch from limited two to justice.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you're right.
That marks that, I think that marks the end of,
Yeah, that marks the early 2000s, like, era.
Of an era for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a good point.
I was distraught.
I think by the time, 2008. I think because of our age difference, by the time limited two changed over to justice, I wasn't wearing it anymore. So I don't remember it as vividly as perhaps you do.
Yeah, yeah, I was deep in the limited two fashion trends.
Oh my gosh.
This play just like captures it all so like in a way that like would make me like cringe if it weren't so funny.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, there are parts of it that I would call like almost like cringe-tastic, because it's cringy, but in like a fun way.
Yes, watching these, I mean, not even just the kids in the play, like the middle schoolers for sure navigate like these crushes and like drama club politics and all of these things. And you're just like,
oh my God.
Is that who I once was? And the answer is yes.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Like, that's like what makes the play. Is the answer is yes. This is who we. This is where we came from. This is who we were.
Yes. Being 11 is cringy. Just embrace it.
Being
11 is cringe.
Being 11 is cringe. Is cringe, but it's also like hard.
Oh my God!
It also,
yeah.
Like sucks, and I like that this play, for all of its like goofy, silly, LOL 2004 was like so cringy. It really does also like like I don't know, like it holds space for these characters to have like real feelings, which I think is hard to do in kind of a goofy like parody play. Like I feel for Emily, who's being bullied about her jean jacket, and I feel for like Riley, who like has a girlfriend who doesn't remember who he is.
Yeah, a girlfriend for 4 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, when we used to pretend that dating meant something before you were in high school.
yeah,
yeah.
But it does. Those feelings are real when you're that age.
Oh, they're definitely
real. And, like, this play knows it.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely
real. This play knows what the stakes are when you're 12 and, like, the biggest thing in the world is, like, whether you get cast in Footloose.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. That, yeah. And I think that's something this play does really well, is that sense of melodrama that, like, to the kids, to the characters, is not melodramatic at all.
It's real. Exactly.
It's real.
Exactly.
But to us as adults, we look at it and we go, oh my God, you're being ridiculous. Forgetting that when we were 11, 12, 13.
Right.
Everything felt like the end of the world.
Right. Right. Well, and I think that's helped by, I'm kind of skipping ahead in my notes here, but the casting like page of this play specifically says all the kids are supposed to be played by adults. Which I love.
Yes, I do too.
I was thinking about other plays that do this, and it is kind of a trend of the last, like, I don't know. I mean, it's always been a thing, but of the last, like, 10, 15, 20 years in the American theater, you think about, like, Spelling Bee, Your Good Man Charlie Brown, The New To Kill a Mockingbird, which I won't talk about, but they do that.
Yes, they do.
And then, like, plays like Dance Nation that, like, do it really well and kind of in a similar way to this play. I was looking for like something like an article or something about this specific tradition, mm-hmm. and everything was talking about it. Like, it was like a problem to work around in a play, or like it was like solely a practical choice because of like labor laws, which sometimes okay. it is. Sometimes well, yes, it is. Sometimes. I think about that. Like with like Peter Pan is almost always played by an adult woman, and that's
yeah.
like yeah, because like it's tough to have like a tween boy.
Yeah, do that huge role. Around. It's tough to have yeah, a tween boy yeah, around, yeah. but
it's tough to have a tween boy around.
It's tough to have tweens of any gender around.
Yeah,
I love them to death. Yeah. I teach them every day, but gosh darn, okay. yeah.
But everything was talking about it, like it was sort of like a problem to be solved, and like, well, if you pull it off, and I just want to talk about this as like the really brilliant artistic choice that it is yeah. to watch, particularly for this play. Like, I saw a reading of it in April, and we're heading into this production in December, and like most of the cast is made up of like younger millennials, like people who roughly were around the middle school age in 2004, and there's something so like special about watching these actors kind of step back into what might be like a past self,
mm-hmm.
And like reflect, and I don't know, like I was saying, like this is who we all once were.
Yeah.
I think it really adds something. I don't think it would be the same watching
an 11-year-old try
a 12-year-old do this scene.
Well, yeah, especially because like we were talking about technology earlier, the advancement of technology was just so fast when we were back in the early 2000s when we were kids.
Yeah,
it's hard, I think, for people. Yeah, let me see. If someone is 11 now, when were they born? Like 2010, 2011?
Wait. Yeah, 2011.
Yeah, 2011. An 11-year-old was born in 2011. They're not going to be able to understand like half of what's happening in the play.
Yeah.
They wouldn't know yeah. what's going
on. I feel like such an old person talking about this, but it really is true. Like times have changed.
Absolutely. So I agree with you. I think that like having adults who were this age at this time gives it like almost more realism than if we had actual middle school kids playing.
Yeah, like having that lived experience. And I think you're right. Yeah. I think you're right.
And having them, like you said, kind of step back into almost their older selves. To
yeah.
understand the play. So I think it could maybe be interesting if someone wanted to try and make it with.
I'd love to see a middle school drama. Like I don't know who would do it.
I don't because yeah.
you know
they're swearing middle and school, weird stuff.
Yeah, like schools, we should like talk about this sometime, how educational theater is so afraid of like
yeah, I mean
thing.
Yeah. As an educator who, I mean, I don't teach theater currently, but that is what I have taught yeah. in the past and would like to teach in the future. Like, yeah, I could definitely have a few words about that.
Yeah. But I'd love to see it done.
That'd be interesting.
Just to see.
Just to see what chaos would
just
ensue.
Just to see what happens. We were talking about how like technology mm-hmm. advanced so rapidly. Like I got the sense throughout this whole play that like all of these characters are on the cusp of something, but like don't know what it is yet. Mm-hmm. And I mean that in terms of like what it means to grow up and yeah. be kind of in that like in between stage, mm-hmm. and also in terms of the time period.
Yes.
Like the world's about to really get different.
Yeah.
And get weird for the next.
Yeah.
Whatever, 18 years at least.
At we'll least. See. Yeah.
Not that it wasn't already. Like yeah. Y2K happened and like things got not awesome.
Yeah.
But, I mean, not that they were in the
90s. Not that everything was perfect in the 90s, but you know.
The good old days.
Mm.
But 90s kids sure would have you believe that it was.
Listen, I'm a 90s kid, and I won't be telling any lies here.
Thank you.
The 90s and the early 2000s honestly bleed together. They bleed together.
Right. They do. And the last thing I really wanted to talk about before we get into our interview portion of the episode here was, like, I don't want to say genre because I think that's reductive and lame.
It can be.
These heightened moments that we get of, like, almost magical realism.
Yeah.
Are so delightful and interesting to me. Like, we spend a lot of time in the play in this kind of, like, parody, melodramatic, rom-com, kind of Mean Girls-esque world. And then, like, Abe Lincoln is on stage.
Yeah.
And it just is Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
And then a frog that you're dissecting in biology class is talking to one of the characters.
Yeah.
And is Kermit the Frog. And we're just like, yeah, we're going with that. And everyone kind of acts normal about it.
Yeah. Oh, and then there's the noodle moment with the two teachers who fall in love.
The noodle dream ballet.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Everyone has to just read this play.
Come see it when we put it up.
So you know what we're talking about when we say noodle dream ballet.
Yes, because of course in this section we want you to get an idea of what the play is about, but we don't want to give away everything.
Absolutely not.
Nah, gotta build some anticipation, some interest, so you at least go read it on New Play Exchange.
Yes.
At the very least. If you're not in New York, you are forgiven from not coming to see it. If you're not in New York.
Well, it's going to be live streamed.
Oh, well, there you go.
Honestly, no excuses.
There you go. So no matter where you are in the world when you're listening to this, you can see the production of a middle school play put on by Friscus Theater at the Tank because it'll be live streamed.
December 11th and 12th, 7 p.m.
Oh, man. Oh, man. I'm excited. Listen, if I'm not there in person, I'll be watching the live stream for sure.
Absolutely.
I know we have listeners not in the U.S. Because Anchor tells me little secrets.
Yeah.
So
I love the little analytics page.
Anchor tells me secrets. So if
Anchor
people,
is always watching. Yeah,
if people aren't in the U.S., you could still probably tune in.
Yeah.
Especially if you have one of those fancy VPNs or something like that.
Yeah.
Anything else you wanted to mention dramaturgically about this play, Lee?
I think everything else I'm gonna save for my chat with Alice.
Oh,
right. Which is in right now.
Which is in right now in 3 seconds for you guys. Unfortunately, we do not have a reading portion for this episode, and that is due to more scheduling BS. And also, I guess, in a way, to encourage you to just come see it.
Yeah, all the more reason to just come see it.
Yeah.
If you want to experience the lovely text of this play, read by lovely actors.
Yes, and maybe later on we will insert something into this episode if we have something recorded from the play, because I have done that before in previous seasons. So potentially there might be something after this, but, you know, it's a surprise. You get to find out by continuing to listen. But, you know, before the next section of this episode, you're going to have to listen to me read some ads because gotta get that bread or whatever the kids say nowadays. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're going to get that bread with some ads. Lee, we'll see you in a bit.
Scooter down. I'm going to take a sip of my iced coffee. All right. Hi, Alice.
Hi, Lee.
How's it going?
It's going well today. Going well.
Thanks for being here. Bryn and I just spent like 20 minutes gushing about how much we love your play.
Oh,
So you're so welcome. So I'm really excited to get to talk to you, the mastermind that it all came from, all about it. Tell me... Well, let's go chronologically. When and how and why was a middle school play born? How long have you been working on this?
Middle school play was, I vividly remember I was walking to get bubble tea with my writing partner Emmy in my neighborhood. And we were like chatting about something. And I was like, oh, I was like, what about like teenage years, the angsty teenage years and what it means to be a teenager and all these things. And she said, get a voice memo. So that's a thing that I normally do is I'm like on a walk or I have an idea, I voice memo it to myself. So like I have the rolling stream of consciousness instead of just like taking a note and not knowing the note later. So it's easier to revisit. So we're walking. And so we just like hopped on and we were like riffing like, oh, this, that. What about this kid? What about this? And then we got bubble tea and then like it kind of fizzled after that because we had other like pots on the stove at that time.
You two are the busiest people I know.
Thanks. We're trying. Trying to make it all happen. And so that was probably, I want to say that was in October of 2019. It was like the seed was planted. And so I went to revisit it with Emmy and she was like, she's like, it's not really my wheelhouse. She's like, I don't know, you should do it. And I was like, all right, you're gifting me this idea. Cool. And so it started as, I ran with it really fast. It started as like 3 or 4 monologues. And that was like, it was officer friendly, Sideswept Bangs, which is no longer a part of it, which is also like picture day, where this girl cuts her bangs in a blackout. Because we all cut our own bangs at one point. And then, Hall Monitor and The Mile. So it was 4.
Nice.
And so it started out with those. And I was like, I don't know what to do with this. And I was like, oh, it's like they can just exist as monologues. It'll be fine. I can send them to people or just put them on New Play Exchange and that'll be that. And then the world ended.
Yeah, I remember that.
The world ended. And so I was trapped inside. And then I joined Fresh Ground Pepper's Partner Accountability Labs, like PAL program. And so I was paired with 2 really great people, Jenny Gorlick and Wes Zurich. And so we would meet like every week, every couple weeks, and we would like bring pages. And so I was like, I have this idea for these things. And they were like, what's the framing device? What do you want to do with it? I was like, I don't know. It could be like kind of like just vignettes, just like, oh, this little thing. And then like maybe a little scene or, and they were like, no, we don't like that. very blunt and very wonderful. They're like, no. And so I was like, oh, okay. They're like, no, there needs to be like a framing device. I was like, okay, well, they're at a school and I'm a person who very much loves a place as the main character. Like that's a vibe of mine. And so I think it went to a couple more monologues and then there was like a Mrs. Hyman monologue where there was like a teacher and they were like, oh, we're really vibing with this. And then I don't think I had a first draft until I started with First Kiss. And even then, I think I still continued working on it with First Kiss Theater and their residency program. And a lot of it's like a blur because we were all like trying to survive. But I remember just like, it was like, oh, this little thing is like taking on steam. And it was a lot of, oh, is this present day versus 2004? But I always vibe with like an old school aesthetic. Like I'd originally wanted Unmarried Men to be in the 80s, but like we didn't know how to write it in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So it's like 2004. I was like, I remember 2004. I vividly remember 2004 and the terror of all that is middle school bullying and terrible things. And I was like, you know what? We're going to reclaim that. We're going to reclaim that time for ourselves as this fun, magical world, like this fun idea. And like, we're going to solve some like nuancey bad things, but like overall, let's reclaim middle school for ourselves with magic and puppets and fun things.
Yeah. It's so interesting you talking about like reclaiming that time, because something Brynn and I talked about just now yesterday when we recorded, but like was the choice to have all of the kids played by adults, which is A little bit of a trend in recent years in the theater. I think about like Dance Nation and other plays that do that. But how wonderful it is to watch these adult actors kind of like step back into a past self and like these memories of that time. Was that always your vision to have all of the middle schoolers played by adults?
I had always wanted that. I really enjoy that as an aesthetic. In terms of, so the first time I encountered that was Spelling Bee at Circle of Square forever ago. And I was like, ah, oh. I was like, yes, please. And so it's been one of those things. And also, I come from a very comedy-based background. So in that vein, like think like sketch comedy, and how they always like you just get to play the younger and it's very fun and carefree and you I don't know it's always been one of those things to me where I'm like yes this was always supposed to be 18 plus playing kids I wrote it in like on the top of the page of like casting notes like this is to be played 18 or above yeah.
I love that. I love that. It's such a fantastic ensemble piece too. Like you were saying, like the school really is the main character, and you've developed this ecosystem. I think there's 25 speaking roles, if I counted right.
I've lost count
Something like
at one
that.
point. At one point, it was like 37,
Oh
and
my God. You've whittled down.
we've whittled down quite a bit. But
Wow.
yeah, it's a huge ensemble cast,
Wow.
and I'm very, very grateful for the cast that I have currently. It's a lot of people I adore and cherish, and they are so willing to come to bat and play and have like really good decisions and like really good strong choices coming out of the gate. And so it's really fun to just watch them like take on these nuanced new things and like see
Yeah.
them play like this adult and then this like very teeny kid who's like indignant and it's really, really fun.
Yeah, let's talk about the process that you're in right now a little bit. I saw the reading that you had in April, was it? It was in the spring,
March, April,
which
somewhere
was
around there.
fantastic. And you're working with a lot of the same cast now for this upcoming production, right? Have you, what is that? And like you said, you've also whittled down quite a bit and made some edits. What has that rewrite process been like over these past few months? And has your cast like influenced any of the new choices that you've made?
Yes, actually. So I was really happy with the reading version. But one thing that one cast member who was not a part of that reading had said to me previous, I'll call them out, Patrick Dunning had said that he was a little bit like disappointed that Officer Friendly, who he was playing at the time, didn't have a full circle arc. And I was like, oh, I was like, I think it's pretty full circle. Like he has this job and he's great. And he's like, no. He's like, it's just like he like walks away and that's that. And I was like, okay, all right. So like that was like an initial seed of like, huh, full circle Officer Friendly, interesting. And then, excuse me. And then, oh, no, didn't get it. And then one of our other cast members from the reading, Caitlin Radykoff, she had this idea. She was like, what if Officer Friendly had a girlfriend? And I was like, oh, do tell. And so she originally was playing Poppy, and she was like, "What if Officer Friendly had a girlfriend and like he quits his job?" And I don't know if I said that or she said it, but I was like, "Okay." She was like, "And they get into this hullabaloo at the dance." And I was like, "All right." I was like, "I'm vibing." And so I took that like note and I just ran with it, and it cut a whole bunch. So it switched out a couple of scenes, but other than, it's been a lot of polishing and just like condensing, but the only there's a couple of new stuff, new scenes that replace like some older stuff. And then I've also in terms of I had rewritten there was an original one picture day where this girl Jean Jacket gets originally she had like she'd cut her bangs and then that wasn't working and then she like her jean jacket got taken and that one worked, but the bang thing didn't really read anymore. It was like, why is it? There's so many things going on at the school. It's like there's a dance, and then there's picture day and officer friendly and all the, like, there's just like one too many things. So I was like, all right. So I revisited that and it reads much better. And then we also get full circle vindication for the bully. She gets her just rewards in this draft as well. So it is, it's more linear and concrete. And I feel it's the tightest it's ever been, which is lovely to like finally be like, ah, this feels like the most complete draft.
Yeah.
With buttons on everything.
It's shocking to me that it's like 60 pages and you cover so much ground, but it doesn't feel like it doesn't feel like it's too much. It just moves so quickly. And I do love that all of these characters have like really whole personalities and really like complete arcs, like that bully character. She's not just the mean girl. We like find out more about her and these insecurities that she has, and it's just like, so it's very impressive to me that you do that with this such a vast array of characters.
Thanks.
I'd love to backtrack a bit. You touched on the magic in this play, which is one of my favorite parts. We spend a little bit of time in this very just like kind of heightened rom-com-y silly middle school world, and then Kermit the Frog is there and he's being dissected and Abe Lincoln is on stage and there's a ramen noodle dream ballet. Was that a conscious choice of I want to have these magical realism isn't even the right word, these like magical elements, or was it just, did it just happen and that was the direction that the play took you in?
So I'm going to give credit where credit is due. And the magical realism happened after it took hold in like my brain as like a fully fledged, oh, I can really do whatever I want. Cause like, you know, we all have free will and you're like, yeah, I can do that. But like, you know, when just like you get like an earworm in there and you're like, oh my gosh, I can really do that. I can do whatever I want.
You're in charge. Yeah.
I am in charge.
It's
and so
crazy.
Like, I knew I was in charge, but it was more of a, oh, anything can happen moment was after I watched Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumolo's Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar with the talking crab and Sharon Gordon Fisherman and Trish in the water. I was like, what is happening in this fever dream of an amazing, like, there's just like random songs. I'm like, I was like, oh my gosh. So after that, after I watched that, I was like, oh, my writing took a very like that's when the magic became infused. That's when Flossie and Avis were introduced into Custodian Phillips. And that's when Abraham Lincoln came back, because Abraham, like, he's the president. That's like the most recognizable president to be like run the mile. And then Kermit the Frog, because I am a huge, huge admirer and love of Jim Henson and the Muppets.
Yes.
Always
the Muppets. Kermit the Frog, the Muppet celebrity, is
Muppet
possibly
celebrity.
My favorite line from the whole play.
It's one of mine. I always chuckle at it. Kermit the Frog came, and then I was like, okay. And then I don't remember. Oh, the Noodle Ballet. I was like, good shows have ballets.
Yes.
I was like, we're gonna have a ramen noodle ballet. And so it just literally, the magic is more in the first act, and which is great. But like, yeah, it was definitely Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. That's just like on a dime. I was like, oh, we're doing this.
Yeah. Whoa. Influential. And yeah, the magic is kind of front loaded, but then like that, the dance scene,
the dance is magical in and of itself.
It is. And also like,
even then, we have a masked Frosty running around.
We do.
Like, crossing his left to everyone.
We do.
So.
We have all these things happening.
Yeah.
And I love the, like, all of these plot lines converging at the end.
Oh, yeah.
It's very, very Shakespearean in its,
oh, well,
in its way. Alice, I don't want to take up too much of your time here, and
Oh,
I
no.
also don't want to give too much away
Oh,
because
I
people can come see a middle school play for
know. They can.
themselves
December
December.
11th and 12th, 7 p.m. at the Tank.
And if
Yes.
you're not in New York, you can watch on the live stream as well. You can watch from anywhere in the world. I'll be there. I'm so excited.
I'll be there too.
I hear rumors there's like gonna be a disco ball, like.
We're hoping for a disco ball. We have a lot of fun. Oh, yeah. We have a lot of fun things. We buried a lot of leads, and everybody's been like, what is this show even about? So, yeah, it's gonna be a vibe.
I'm stoked. I'm
You don't want
stoked. I'm stoked.
to miss it.
Alice, thank you so much. Everyone come see a middle school play December 11th and 12th at the Tank. And thank you for listening today. We'll catch you next time. Bye. Dope. That's it. That's all.
Awesome.
Quick, easy. Thank you so much.
Of course, thank you. Yeah,
Yeah,
I hope I did fine.
always.
Literally just talking into the ether is so weird.
That's perfect. I know. I always feel like crazy.